Over the next few weeks here at Wine Chat, we're going to be taking a look at the wines of Italy. Now, some of their most famous grapes have found a new home in Australia. First defined in 1716, Chianti is one of the oldest and most widely known wine regions of Italy. Sangiovese has been ubiquitous with the regions into the 19th century and is loved for its versatility and food friendliness. I remember one of my good friends paired it with a liver and some fava beans. As always, we are joined by Cal to talk all things Chianti and Sangiovese. Cal, welcome back to the show for Wine Chat.
Hey, it's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Why would Dr. Lecter pair Chianti with some fava beans?
Well, I think fava beans is actually a really traditional pairing, like kind of with that stuff. Like, I think we forget that the sort of like pulse and legume diet of central Italy would have been mainly things like fava beans. Mm. And that would have been a really common side dish for basically since the Roman era on that kind of stuff. Like, you get these, like, it's one of my favorite pastas, but it's like the, like, traditional Roman pasta since like 200 AD or whatever. And that thing's basically just like fava beans, preserved lemon, and then whatever green vegetable you have around, and white wine. And that is a good time. And I think liver makes sense because if it's more like ferrous, you know, any of those sort of, I mean, I don't eat a lot of like offal,
sure.
But you know, my understanding is that they tend to be quite, like metallic sometimes, and that can pair nicely.
Cool. Well, there you go. Dr. Lecter continuing to prove himself to be a man of culture and good taste.
Yeah, yeah.
What a way to start the wine show. So give us an overview of Chianti as a region.
Yeah, totally. So Chianti, is sort of, the first references we have to Chianti come from like writings in the 13th century, and it's sort of you hear about sort of like the Chianti Mountains, which are basically in between Siena and Florence, and sort of that region of that central region of Italy, like Tuscany, more or less. There's been a few shifts, so yeah, as we mentioned at the top, there was sort of 1716 was when Chianti was originally defined, and this is sort of one of the very, very early examples of these wine regions being defined, up there with sort of like Bordeaux and with the Napoleonic legislation being passed. And, you know, this was sort of like one of the like classic like Medici Duke being like, okay, we are setting up some legislation to define exactly where everything is. And those borders have sort of fluctuated a little bit over time. And then in the, I want to say 1932, sort of there was a big reevaluation of wine production all across that area. And there was a lot of proponents being like, hey, we need to protect Chianti and make it a more serious thing. So they quadrupled the amount of land that counted as Chianti, but then instead split it into a whole bunch of different subregions. And the one we're mainly going to sort of talk about today a lot, it will be Chianti Classico, which is more or less those original 1716 boundaries. If you ever see it, it'll have like the black cockerel on it. That's like its defining characteristic. But that is sort of its own unique sub-region within Chianti that is much like in the way in which, like, you know, in Burgundy, you'll have a village Burgundy versus a Premier Cru Burgundy. Like, Chianti Classico is sort of seen as a more serious, specific region that has, like, more tighter control there.
Sure. And what's going on with the bottles?
Yeah.
What's that about?
Oh, yeah. You mean a fiasco?
Is that,
they're actually called a fiasco.
Well, yeah, it is a bit of a fiasco.
Yeah.
When I see it, I'm like, what is going on?
Well, so this is. I'll get the fiasco thing out of the way first. So fiasco is like it's like a Latin derivative term. And so the theory is that the way that a fiasco became known as like a great loss or like a total schmozzle, was that there was an Italian term, and I'm going to mispronounce this, but it was something like fere e fiasco, which would basically mean like, hey, let's play for a bottle. And it's important to remember that a fiasco back then isn't like a nice 750ml bottle. I think it was like 5.6 litres, right?
Ooh, yeah.
And so, you know, if you're playing a game of football and then the losing side has to buy the other a round of fiascos, that's a pretty costly loss,
yeah,
all of a sudden.
Yeah.
You know what
it
I mean?
It is a bit of a fiasco.
Yeah. But the shape of that bottle is because when you're blowing glass, it's really easy to make things into spheres. But spheres don't tend to sit on tables very nicely. So instead of doing what they did in Bordeaux, which is to give something a nice flat bottom with a punt, instead they started to weave little baskets around it. Then that way it would flatten out. And you see, especially in a lot of the older sort of Fiasco's designs, they usually have sort of like, they'll have like braided handles and stuff like that because they are much larger and usually quite long-necked bottle shapes. So they'll have like handles so you can actually much more easily carry them and stuff like that. And then eventually they ended up getting the bare neck and shoulders because to sort of stop fraud, they had to sort of stamp them. And if you stamp the basket, you can just take the basket off and put it on a new bottle. So they then had to stamp them higher and higher up the neck so that the only way to reuse it would be to completely destroy the bottle.
Yeah. And now it's a fantastic little iconic bottle shape.
Yeah.
Yeah. When, you know.
And a great a great tabletop role playing game for those of you who are interested.
Okay, I'll get more out of that afterwards. I'm curious to know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
let's move on to the second varietal.
Yeah.
That is grown in the region.
Yeah.
Sangiovese.
Yeah. So Sangiovese is by all accounts a fairly modern grape varietal. We sort of don't really have a lot of records of it there pre-1700s. And like etymologically, it's like blood of Jehovah, Sangiovese.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a variety. This note is going to come up a lot. So like, people write this down. It has got high tannins, high acids, and tends to be a little weak in color and prone to oxidization. You will hear this note for a lot of these Italian red varietals. It is part of the reason why Italian wine can have this sort of not homogenized, but it does become identifiable when done with indigenous grapes. And Sangiovese is a bit of an interesting one because throughout its sort of modern era of production, there has been a lot of overproduction and a lot of poor production of Sangiovese. And that is where you sort of get that, like, the cheap bottle of Chianti on the table, it sort of comes from that, like, industrialization of the region where a lot of that, a lot of Sangiovese was being produced for volume and not really for quality. And this is part of the reason why the Chianti Classico guys are so protective is because they're really trying to go back to making higher quality wines out of higher percentages of Sangiovese. There is also like a 20% blending in component. There's 13 different indigenous red varietals that can be in there. But also more commonly, you'll actually find white grapes blended into Chianti, specifically for stuff that is meant to be drunk younger because it can kind of... In cold years, Sangiovese tends to get pretty hard, quite aggressive tannins. Part of that is because it struggles. It's late ripening, so it really struggles to get that sort of phenolically ripe. So if you blend in a little bit of something like Trebbiano or Malvasia, which can be like a little bit of a softer white wine, it can help to sort of pull back in that aggression and harshness and make it a wine that's much more approachable in its young age.
Cool. What makes Sangiovese such a unique varietal?
Yeah, and it's, to me, like, a lot of what I personally find unique and quite appealing about Sangiovese is this, like, really beautiful sort of, like, sour cherry notes that you get. But also it's quite, for a late ripening variety, it's actually quite flexible.
Yeah.
You can make it as a lighter, earlier harvested style of wine because it does have that long hang time. This is also part of the reason why a lot of the Chianti sub-regions will have very specific alcohol percentages because it stops people from harvesting too early and then backfilling it out with some of the earlier ripening red varietals. But also because it has that quite, like I think Jancis Robinson describes it as like gravelly tannin structure, it's really well suited to aging. Traditionally, it would be spend quite a bit of time in oak casks. You get like Chianti Classico Reserva, which I think spends 24 months. And then we'll probably spend another like 5 to 10 years in bottle until it sort of hits its really nice drinking window. And something that started off as being, quite sharp in terms of acid and quite like stony and hard in terms of tannin structure moves into this stuff that is like really beautifully supple and can still keep some of that quite interesting fruit like aromas, but move into all these sort of beautiful dried herb notes. And sort of, especially when you're using less pronounced oak characteristics and really letting the wine to sort of like soften and mature in its own way. I think like the wines of made out of Sangiovese that are allowed to have a little bit of age are really, really beautiful wines that, don't quite fall down that same like Cabernet or Shiraz path with age. They tend to get a little bit lighter. The color falls out quite quickly as well. But I think they just make really elegant and beautiful wines, especially if you sort of are willing to play with it a little bit more, because it does, I think, require a little bit more work than some other grapes.
Sure. And I understand that Australia has quite a base of Sangiovese growing.
Totally.
I've drunk a couple of Australian Sangioveses around a couple of restaurants here, but if I wanted to drink an Australian Sangiovese, where would I go?
Yeah. So I guess, important to note, Sangiovese is the most widely planted red grape in Italy, right? It's pretty ubiquitous there. And like with many migrant cultures, when Australia started to get Italian immigrants, they wanted to grow things that reminded them of home, so they started growing a lot of Sangiovese all over the place. And you can sort of see this where, very cleanly, any of the wine regions that were started by Italian immigrants usually have Sangiovese as a pretty major backbone. I'm thinking specifically of places like, the King Valley or like McLaren Vale. There's some, like McLaren Vale has some really beautiful old vine material down there that is really, really great. And I think there's also, pockets that are sort of hanging out in like the Adelaide Hills. And I think there's actually some really great Italian grapes being grown out in places like the Riverland. You get like your sort of like Freemans and Ricoteras as well, who are sort of focusing on these what we sort of refer to broadly as alternative varietals, which is to say it's not Shiraz or Cabernet. But like Sangiovese does have a very long history here. And I think there's a lot of growers growing in a lot of different circumstances. Like, you get the guys out in hilltops in Western New South Wales, like quite like higher altitude, but it's sort of trying to mimic that sort of rolling hills of Tuscany sort of thing. To let it get that like long sunlight hours that really gets it to be fully ripe. And those wines do tend to be like, a little less like boozy and a little less rich, and they tend to be a little prettier and a little more restrained because it is in that cooler climate. And then, obviously McLaren Vale, you get a little bit better ripeness there. You can get some like, I think it's Coriol from memory, but they do like some really beautiful sort of like closer to that reserva style, like big, gutsy, full-bodied styled Sangiovese that I think is like really, really fun. And once again, has that aging potential, which is to me is like a really key thing about this, which is sort of like, not only does it make a great young, fresh wine, but like if you treat it a little more seriously, it becomes a wine that has some really serious aging potential and is really rewarding for actually putting in the time to age it.
And this is maybe a bit of an odd question, but there's no Chianti grown in Australia, is there?
No, so Chianti is the region. It's like the Champagne thing again.
Oh, I see.
Right. Chianti is the region, and part of that region requirements is that all wines have to be at least 70% Sangiovese.
Right, I see. Okay.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of indigenous varietals there. Chianti is a bit of a weird one because it sort of existed before Sangiovese existed, if that makes any sense. But it's sort of the, I can't remember the specific name of the varietal, but the sort of indigenous grapes that were typically blended in there.
Right.
So basically all fell out of fashion in the early 1900s.
Right. So Chianti's generally a blend of indigenous varietals to that region.
Yep.
In a wine.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. And depending on which sub-region of Chianti is sort of, is your requirements for what you're allowed to put in that blend. I'm not going to bore everyone. We're not doing Wessex exams here. You don't need to memorize any of that stuff. But just know that it's mostly Sangiovese. And most regions let you blend in about 10% white varietals as well.
Fabulous.
Which is always fun.
And what are you drinking this week?
Shout outs to the Unicozello Pastafarian.
Hey.
This might not be shocking to anyone, but this wine has Sangiovese in it.
Whoa.
I know.
Thematic.
I might have even planned this one.
No.
For once. instead of being like, what did I drink last night? But I think this is a really great example.
I'm really liking this Chardonnay.
Yeah. It's like, I've drunk 70 bottles of Chardonnay this week. But the Pastafarian, I think, is a really great example of sort of that, like, what I always think of that, like, sour cherry dried herbs thing.
Sure.
But also, I think, is a testament to the side of Sangiovese that we didn't really talk that much about here, but is that sort of plush and just, like, desperate for food with it, that sort of higher acid means that things like tomato-based sauces go really well with it, because it can take that higher acidity. And having a bit more of that tannin structure means it also, anything with like meat or cheese or dairy in it, it'll also hold up to that really well. And sort of means that you can, you know, it can be your pizza pasta wine, but it'll also totally hold up to like, you know, a steak or like a pretty serious bit of protein there. And I think this is just a great example that's like pretty approachable and pretty widely available. That I think, like, if you want to get into Australian Sangiovese, I think it's a really nice point to start off with.
Cool, fantastic.
No worries.
Well, as usual, been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Do you have an event coming up?
I do. Speaking of Unicozello.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God. It's almost as if I actually planned this.
No.
For once. I know.
Surely not.
I know. It's amazing. Next month's installment of The Drop is going to be with Unicozello. I'm going to be showing off a bunch of their wines, and they've got a really cool focus on alternate varietals. Some of which we might be talking about in future weeks.
Oh.
But the tickets for that should now be live on the Hive Bar website, and there should be a little Instagram post going up on the Hive Bar Instagram feed today, tomorrow, sometime, very soon. That'll have all the information you need to purchase tickets to this fantastic event.
And what are we looking at next week?
Next week we're going to be talking about Nebbiolo. Whoa. And the Piemonte region.
Fabulous.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a fun time.
Sounds like a good time.
Mm.
Thank you for coming on.
No, absolute pleasure.
See you next week.